Thank you, Jeff. What I hope that we can do in 12 minutes is to think, to quote Dr. West, Socratically about our theories of health behavior and ask the question, how inclusive are they? And if they're not inclusive enough, what can we do about that? And I'm going to use as an example this construct, perceived susceptibility. In this case, perceived susceptibility for getting breast cancer and the behavioral outcome, likelihood of getting a mammogram. But I think we can probably insert any number of our health behavior constructs into this thought experiment. So let's see. All right, I don't have any relationships to disclose, but I would like to very much acknowledge my co-authors, as well as Dr. Vicki Shavers, who's been really a mentor on this and similar projects, and my student collaborators. Perceived susceptibility. So it's a central construct in theories of health behavior, and if we aggregate across studies, we typically find a somewhat modest, but a reliable relationship between perceived susceptibility and the behavioral outcome of choice. In this case, use of mammogram. And we're not always enamored by this construct. The coefficients are often small. We don't always find the effect. It's enough to make you go home and wonder, you know, are people completely irrational? But what I'm not going to be doing today is arguing that we don't make sense. In fact, I have a strong belief in self-preservation, and when we're faced with the lion or the prospect of getting breast cancer, that we do whatever we can do to prevent this from happening. So I'm not going to be arguing that we don't make sense or that some groups make less sense than others, but what I am going to be presenting the case for is that sometimes it doesn't necessarily make sense to only use this construct as a foundation for our interventions. So this possibility has been raised in the literature. We look over time, we find this issue raised that perceived susceptibility may lack cultural resonance for some groups, in particular Blacks, Hispanics, for example. And the idea often raised is that we have different meta-narratives for personal control over health, and that if you take personal control out of the equation, well, perceptions of risk don't factor in either. An idea that I also really like is that socioeconomic and other barriers emerge as more important determinants of risk perception, important determinants of behavior in groups that disproportionately face these barriers. So for example, if one faces a lack of confidence in receiving quality, respectful health care, well, this may lead to an uncoupling of the relationship between perceived susceptibility or other cognitive factors and behavior. So we have to ask ourselves if sometimes, for some groups in some contexts, isn't using perceived susceptibility or other types of cognitive constructs as a basis for our intervention something like trying to put a square peg in a round hole? And so to add to this discourse, we ask the following question. Is the relationship between perceived susceptibility and mammography use weaker among Hispanics and Blacks than whites? So it's kind of a simple question. And why would we ask this? Well, hopefully, if you're interested in theory, it could help to refine your understanding of the conditions under which this favorite construct predicts behavior. If you're not so interested in theory, but more interested in application, maybe it can help us to evaluate the utility of using this construct across the board in our interventions. But probably most importantly, at least for me, hopefully the answer to this question will motivate us to look beyond, look for additional constructs that we can include in our theories of health behavior. So some might say, okay, mammography use, there isn't such a huge disparity. But I would argue that even if mammography use were equal across racial ethnic groups, that this would still remain an important question, because of course we need to know the proximal determinants of behavior within each cultural group, within each community. But mammography use is obviously not equal across racial ethnic groups. Regular screening is lower among Blacks than whites. Recent and regular screening is lower among Hispanics than whites. So to answer our question, we went to the 2003 HINTS data set. It's a publicly available national representative probability sample of adults. And it oversamples Blacks and Hispanics, employs random digit telephone interviews in either Spanish or English, depending on the choice of the participant. And just going into these analyses, just so you know, for each of the multiple logistic regressions that I'm going to report, we assessed or adjusted for marital status, education, age, healthcare coverage, and usual source of healthcare. You don't see income on this list because there's a fairly high non-response rate for income and it's correlated with education. So for these analyses, we used a subset of the sample, women age 40 and older without a history of breast cancer, and falling into these three racial ethnic groups. So of course, race ethnicities was one of our predictors of interest, but so too were three dimensions of perceived susceptibility: perceived absolute risk, perceived comparative risk, and worry about getting breast cancer. The outcome of interest was ever having had a mammogram. So self-reporting of having had at least one mammogram in one's lifetime. Bear in mind, of course, that this is 2003, and the recommendations were that women start regular mammography at the age of 40. So the first question you might ask is, well, what's the rate of mammography use in this sample? And as you might have expected, since our outcome is ever having had a mammogram, that is fairly high. But of course, there's this non-trivial percentage of Hispanics, about 20%, who have never had a mammogram. And although ever having had a mammogram is not necessarily a clinically important outcome, probably repeat mammography is much more important, it's an important outcome with respect to public health. If you haven't had a mammogram and you're in this age 40 and over group, even with all of the educational efforts and all of the free access to screening mammography, you must be facing pretty high barriers to mammography. So as a group, did perceived susceptibility predict mammography use? The answer is yes, yes, and yes for all three perceived risk and worry constructs. And this has been reported elsewhere, but what we didn't know was whether or not this varied by race ethnicity. So we stratified by race ethnicity, and here you can see that for whites, that's the first column, that the effects remain. In fact, they strengthen in the case of absolute risk and worry. Greater odds ratios, greater odds of having had a mammogram as a function of the perceived risk and worry predictors, comparative risk, we lose significance. You'll notice that the point estimate is only 0.01 different for the entire group. But look at the columns for blacks and Hispanics. Do you see any significant findings? No, there are none. And it's not just a matter of smaller sample size. These point estimates, the odds ratios, are quite close to one in most cases. There does not seem to be a relationship between perceived susceptibility and mammogram use. And if you want to look at the interaction terms themselves, here's what we find. So if you interact race ethnicity, either comparing Hispanics and whites or blacks and whites, with the perceived susceptibility constructs predicting to mammogram use, we find that the interaction terms when we're comparing Hispanics versus whites are significant. The interaction terms when comparing blacks compared to whites for absolute risk and worry are not significant. They follow the same pattern. Probably want to replicate this thought experiment with a larger sample. So getting back to the purpose of this work, what are we doing here? So hopefully we've explored whether or not there's diversity or potential diversity in the utility of perceived susceptibility. And especially for Hispanics compared to whites, yes, this may be the case. And it provides some guidance. The take-home message for me, at least, is if I were to be planning an intervention around mammography use with this Hispanic community, we'll probably want to do some more formative research, not just take a social cognitive construct off the shelf. And then from the point of view of understanding perceived susceptibility as a construct, here we've encountered perhaps a boundary condition, which can start to explain why sometimes we don't get the effect, why the effect might be weaker sometimes than others. But just take a step, I would just want to take a step back. Think about what we ask our students to do, the high standard we hold ourselves to, and the high standard that our funders hold us to. We are asked to use theory as a basis for our interventions. This is great, but we need to ask two questions. One is, can we expand these theories to make them more inclusive? And maybe one way to get to the first goal is to start shining light on some of the conditions that makes it an unattainable luxury for some people to have perceived susceptibility or other cognitions influence behavior. It's very hard, you might imagine, to think about engaging behaviors that reduce one's risk for getting cancer 20 years down the road if For example, you have very pressing household economic concerns today, or very hard to do these behaviors if you're socially isolated, if you lack the social support and the social networks that can help you to do these behaviors, if you have employment conditions that don't allow you to get to the doctor. I'm sure we can add any number of social factors into this list. I'll just skip down to the bottom and draw attention to the last one. So when I turned to my favorite MD researcher and said, "Now, why didn't you go to the doctor? You can barely walk." He said, "Well, I didn't go to the doctor today because I didn't feel like being disrespected today." Certainly, a legitimate lack of trust in the healthcare system is going to be a barrier to engaging in screening or other health behaviors, even despite any level of perceived risk. So the conclusion that I've come to is that we need to grow our theories of health behavior. We need to include social determinants of health in them, and we need to shine a light on understanding how these determinants of influence health outcomes and direct more attention, public discourse, and resources into reducing the barriers to health that are unfairly distributed across the population.